Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
Good evening. So tonight I'm gonna go back to some basics. So this might be review for everyone or new to some people, we'll find out. I'd like to start with a story. So when Dogen Zenji went to China, he traveled in the company of Mio Zen, another monk. And he was there to find the true teachings of Buddha. Some of us know this story well. And while he was on this travel, there's a short story about his time. And I'm going to read that to you first. And I got this version of the story from Sotoshu's website. You can find it there. They have a really nice section of short stories that if you haven't explored, it's a nice place to go. Okay, I'll talk louder. So Dogen wrote, "The name of Buddhism has been heard in Japan for many long years now. But as for correctly preparing food for those undergoing training in the monk's hall, it has never been written about, nor has anyone ever taught me about it." So he was preparing instructions for a cook, which is a really wonderful Zen text, and the story comes from that. The following is an experience from Dogen Zenji while he was staying at a temple in China. On the way to visit his traveling companion, Mio Zen, who was recuperating from an illness in the infirmary, Dogen Zenji passed the Buddha hall. There he saw an old monk whose back was bent like a bow and whose eyebrows were as white as the feathers of a crane. The old monk was drying mushrooms one by one on the tiles which paved the courtyard. In a large temple, great quantity of mushrooms are consumed. Therefore, many are dried in the hottest part of summer and put away for future use. The old monk, Yun Osho, supported himself with a bamboo staff. And in spite of the heat, he wore no hat, so he was drenched with sweat. He was totally absorbed in his task. In the scorching sun, the paving tiles were as hot as an oven. This sort of duty on such a day would not have been easy, even for a young person. And for an old monk, nearly 70, it must have been especially trying. The young monk, Dogen, seeing this, felt pity and walked up to the old man and asked, "How old are you?" Yun Tenzo stayed his busy hand long enough to answer, "This year I'll be 68. A person of your age shouldn't be doing this kind of work. Why don't you get someone else to do it?" Dogen suggested with concern. "Other people are not me," Yun Tenzo replied sharply. Dogen must have felt as though he had been stabbed in the chest. "Yes, that's true. But why don't you just rest for a while? You shouldn't overtax your body," caringly objected Dogen. Yun Tenzo firmly responded, "And just what other time should I wait for?" and kept on his task. This second arrow went into Dogen even more deeply than the first. These words were truly precious gems, and each word resounded within him. Having been spoken to this way, Dogen felt helpless to say anything more. Later he wrote, "I gave up, but while walking down the corridor, I secretly realized what an important function this work has. Other people are not me." This statement defines the spatial location of here. "And just what other time should I wait for?" defines the temporal position of now. Not somebody else, me, here. Not later, now. Reality is the place where this here and this now cross. And then there's two lines at the bottom of this page, if you go to the site. It says, "There has never been an age in which the ups and downs of life have been so violent as those today." If this expression seems trite, Let me revise it and say that there has never been a period of social change and development as extreme as today. It's funny, when I read those two lines, I thought, I wonder when they were written. They could have been written today, and I'm pretty sure I've heard them maybe every decade or so, someone says something like that. It's always true. And so this lesson of here and now is important, and it comes as true, and we know it. When we hear it, we know it. It might motivate us for a moment, and then sometimes it slips away. We forget. So I'd like to talk about what gets in the way of that, of staying in the here and now. And one lesson that we have from Buddha is the five hindrances. So that's what I'm going to talk about. So there's another passage I have here from the Pali Canon that directly describes the five hindrances. And this is translated by Chanasaro Bhikkhu. And so that quote is, "The Blessed One Buddha said, these five are obstacles, hindrances that overwhelm awareness and weaken discernment. Which five? Sensual desire is an obstacle, a hindrance that overwhelms awareness and weakens discernment. Ill will, sloth and drowsiness, restlessness and anxiety. Uncertainty is an obstacle, a hindrance that overwhelms awareness and weakens discernment. When a monk has not abandoned these five obstacles, when he is without strength and weak in discernment, it is possible for him to understand what is for his own benefit, to understand what is for the benefit of others, to understand what is the benefit of both, to realize a superior human state, a truly noble distinction in knowledge and vision." So to be in the here and now is to understand what's for your benefit and the benefit of others. It's also our one responsibility. To be in the here and now is our one responsibility. And I would argue all the others fall under that umbrella. So I'd like to talk about each of these hindrances. Out of curiosity, is there anyone here who's never heard of that before? Just so we can have a baseline. Okay. So the first hindrance is sense desire. And the first thing that probably comes up is physical desires. So that's comfort, that's food, really good chocolate, sex, intoxicants. I would even say that dopamine hit you get from doom scrolling on social media, probably. And in Buddhism, our mind is also a sense. So that includes mental desires. So pride, getting positive feedback, daydreaming. So that's one that we work with probably every day. A second hindrance is ill will, and that's any type of aversion. So that could be a slight annoyance. It could be real hatred or anger. It could be those little resentments that build up, ill will. And then the third hindrance is sloth and torpor. And this one works together. So sloth refers to a lack of motivation to put effort forward. And torpor refers to the result of that in our minds and bodies, the sluggishness that we feel. And those two qualities go back and forth. So you might first feel a lack of motivation and feel into that and let yourself get lazy, or you could be in that process, be lazy, and then you couldn't get the motivation back. They go back and forth, and the laziness itself leads to consequences. And then another one like that is the fourth hindrance, which is restlessness and worry. And it's similar because those qualities feed each other. When our mind's restless or bored, it's trying to grasp at things that might relieve the bored feeling or bring some kind of excitement, some satisfaction. Monkey mind is a term that we use for this often. Our mind wants to be at work. So we often put it to work. Another word for worry is regret or remorse, and that's focusing on the past, how it might affect the future. So it goes in both directions of time and is not in the here and now. And then the fifth hindrance is uncertainty or skeptical doubt. So to be clear, this isn't reasonable doubt. It's healthy to have doubts about things, to ask questions, to be curious. This type of uncertainty isn't engaging in healthy discernment. It's a persistent doubt that's interfering with your confidence and with your engagement and practice, your ability to be in the here and now. It's not productive. So those are the five. You could probably pick one and study it your whole life and never quite overcome it. But how do we move beyond our hindrances? So we have some instructions for that too. The main thing that we do in our practice is to become familiar with our hindrances. How do they arise? How do they look for you? What patterns are happening? And so this happens when we sit Zazen. We say we keep our mind windows open during Zazen. We let visitors come through. We say hello to them, but we don't make them tea. So we watch that. And that's one way to learn about our hindrance is also to overcome it sometimes. Just the acknowledgement alone to say, I'm feeling anger, alerts you that your mind is clouded, that there's something going on. And just paying attention to that alone is a way not to be hindered by it. So that's just that acknowledgement is one way. There's also redirection. So if you're feeling anger, you can consider with your compassionate heart what that person might be experiencing. And in a real way, you can give yourself more perspective and context. This could also be true for sense desires. You can know that you're craving chocolate, and you can consider maybe a little chocolate. Maybe I will bake brownies for my friends. Find a wholesome way to overcome that hindrance or incorporate it into your life that day. And go back to the present by seeing that you're back in the here and now for what it is. You can also consider the negative effects of a hindrance. So if you know that your anger clouds your judgment or clouds the way of seeing, if you know your anger brings up your blood pressure, you might respond more skillfully. You might consider some other solutions. And by acknowledging the negative effects of your hindrance, you're already in a path of moving away from it hindering you. When we talk about these strategies, it's a little tricky because we don't want to see these as tools to use and to cling on to either. That alone is a hindrance. That alone is a mental activity that might be getting in our way. And there's also a term I like to talk about. Most of you probably heard it, but spiritual bypass. Oftentimes this exercise can lead to that. So for those who haven't heard of that, spiritual bypass is a term that was coined in the 1980s by John Wellwood, and he was a Buddhist teacher and therapist. And it refers to the tendency to use spiritual ideas to avoid facing unresolved emotional issues, psychological wounds, and unfinished tasks. And so when we do this, when you're redirecting your hindrance or considering its negative effects, or observing it, it's important that you really engage. It's not to push something away or to avoid that, it's to work with it. So face that anger, face the wounds that you're feeling. I would say be grateful to your body for alerting you, be grateful to your mind to see it, and then really do the work that's needed in a true way. It adds perspective and context and opens you to new possibilities rather than forcing something down. You can have both. So if we went to each hindrance, sense desire, can you enjoy a pleasure that you feel without holding on to it, to get money without thinking I need more immediately, to enjoy that piece of chocolate without eating the whole bar, although sometimes the whole bar is okay. Mm-hmm. Can you find that same sense of pleasure in little tasks that you might not prefer? Can you be fully present in a wholesome way? Can you find the joy of being with a loved one or a pet, or the taste of a home-cooked meal, or see a flower after a sashin in its full beauty? That is sense pleasure in a wholesome way. If you experience ill will, can you allow yourself to be present with that emotion without holding on to it, without creating another story, having a conversation with someone that's not there, thinking about the future that could happen before it's there? Can you appreciate your mind and body for alerting to you that something needed your attention, and that's the emotion that came up for you? And can you be aware that maybe you're not seeing clearly if you're having ill will? If you're experiencing sloth and torpor, can you notice that your body is maybe asking for some rest? Can you pay attention to that and consider how to skillfully find some balance? If you're experiencing boredom, can you pay attention to that and interest yourself in the here and now? If you're experiencing restlessness and worry, again, like sloth and torpor, can you interest yourself in the here and now, find stillness, and pay attention? Keep your mind open to new possibilities and nurture that openness with joy and acceptance. If you're experiencing uncertainty, again, come back to the present. Find joy and comfort in our interconnectedness. Understand that uncertainty is referencing yourself, and there's more to it than that. So I also brought instructions to the cook for the same name as what we started with by Bernie Glassman and Rick Fields. I liked what they had to say. They said, the accomplished Zen cook is something of an alchemist. He or she can transform poisons into virtues. The Zen cook doesn't do this by adding a secret ingredient, but by leaving something out. The Zen cook leaves our attachment to the self. For example, anger is considered a poison when it is self-motivated and self-centered. But take that attachment to the self out of anger, and the same emotion becomes the fierce energy of determination, which is a very positive force. Take the self-centered aspect out of greed, and it becomes the desire to help. Drop the self-orientation from ignorance, and it becomes a state of unknowing that allows new things to arise. So I'd like to stop there, keep it short, but I wonder what comes up for you, what hindrances you're working with, if you knew you were working with them, and what does work for you? How do you turn your mind?
We human beings are very complicated animals. Today, I was checking my email, and Lee called me to the door. I was like, come here. I was like, what's going on? And I had the fan on. I couldn't hear what she was saying. She was saying, come here. I went to the door, And she had the sprinkler on the hose on at a very gentle level. And the hummingbird was actually coming to the water and getting a bath. And she did that for 10 minutes. So that's what I was thinking. You know, here we are, we create all these stories in our heads. And a simple animal or a bird like a hummingbird can come up to somebody and say, hey, I need water. Yeah. And it's I think all the stories that we tell ourselves, they just get in our own way. We get on in our own way. I think that is, out of all the hindrances, that is the biggest one that we face. And that I feel that is always an issue. And so lately, I've been visiting my mother, and she's 95, and she keeps on saying to me, nobody valued me, nobody liked me, I never did anything valuable. And here she was in a third world country. As a woman, she became a full colonel. She started the first and the biggest children's hospital. And brought us up, and yet she has all these regrets. So I just sit there and sometimes just listen to her, and that's the only thing that I can do. And one day I had to ask her, I said, didn't you do this, this, and this? She's like, yeah. So I guess you didn't really do nothing. You did do something good in this world, right? You healed a lot of people, you gave and you gave healing to a lot of people. But it's all this old conditioning that comes up for her till now. That, you know, so it's very hard sometimes to go and sit with her. And even after sitting for so long, I do get sometimes unnerved, because it just makes me think, if she's one person in the world who feels like this, how many more people in the world feel like this, that they were never enough and they weren't liked or they weren't loved? And it's just this kind of, it's like, this is what I was thinking, like, this kind of hindrance, it's also a hindrance, the story that we tell ourselves, you know. And like, you know, we come and we sit for 40 minutes and we go in the morning and have coffee with people and talk to them, and somebody ends up feeling walking away good about themselves. And sometimes you feel like saying, oh, I did nothing. You know, but all I did was talk to somebody. But, you know, you never know how we may affect somebody. It's really dangerous to get into these kind of hindrances like you're talking about. One of the things that you said was regret, and I think that's a big one for all of us, to have this kind of regret. And it's very dangerous to get caught up in it, because it can really bring us down. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for your talk, Ona. When you were listing the hindrances, I was saying, yes, yes, all of the above, what I said. And I think it's interesting to then, when one of the hindrances come up, particularly when we're sitting, I don't really try to work with it at that moment or recognize it. I don't chase it away necessarily, because I think it's important to be here with what is. But I don't hold on to it either, and I don't try to work with it or look at it at that moment. I tend to say, oh, Diane, go back to counting your breaths. Or sometimes I say the serenity prayer because I feel like I'm distracted. So anyway, it was very helpful for you to say, see it and recognize it and be with it and maybe even work with it while we're sitting. And I tend to think I have to just have this totally blank mind. And so I keep going back to trying to get that. So in a way it's grasping something else, right? Oh, I need to empty my life. So thank you for that and for reviewing that.
This week has been a little hard for me because one of my patients died. And at the beginning, I felt sadness. The next thing I felt, well, I shouldn't feel that way. I have to be happy. And then I remembered so many times I have read that nothing's permanent. So I allowed myself to feel the sadness. And as I did that, it began to diminish. So what you said right now was helpful, and thank you.
So Anna, thank you for your talk. As you were going through the hindrances, when you got to number 5, uncertainty, and the thing that popped into my head was, little doubt, little enlightenment, great doubt, great enlightenment. So why isn't certainty also a hindrance? And then you talked about the fact that these hindrances are really hindrances, not so much because of what they are, even for ill will, it's the fact that we grasp them, we clutch at them. And the image that popped into my head for some reason at that point was all of these various hindrances, these various problems are sort of like different baits on different fish hooks. And the fish seems like it's going after different things, but actually the problem is that it's biting on the hook. And the clinging is what we have to get rid of. It's not the uncertainty or the certainty or any of the hindrances so much as the fact that those are attractive things to cling to and grasp onto. So thank you for that.
This is David up in Healdsburg now. I just wanted to say thank you for your Dharma talk, and I particularly enjoy the revisitation of the simple beginner's mind kind of teachings. And Gil Fronsdahl's book about the 5 hindrances is, for me, a return to the simple principles. And I've been at the appreciating the simple principles for a long time. So thank you for your talk tonight, a return to simple principles. Thank you.
Hi, Anna. I don't know if you remember me, actually. I met you a while back. So what comes to my mind, actually, is a couple of things. The first one is expectation. The second one is sense. Like what I see, what I hear, those kind of the senses. So actually, I was listening to your talk, and I got a different message when I closed my eyes versus when my eyes was open. So I think that is also, when I turn off, the visual sensation, I get a different message than, oh, if I'm looking at you and then trying to listen at the same time. So my experience was, I get a better message when my eyes was closed. So I think that can be a hindrance in some way, like the senses. So I think if we, how many senses, the desire can be generated from senses, And then the other thing that comes to my mind is the expectation. So, is that hindrance or not, whether something is a hindrance or not, it's kind of some expectation. Okay, if I'm expecting this, I don't get that. I think that can also play a role in hindrance. You know, maybe, you know, I'm trying to go to a concert, but on the way going there, I see something, I talk to someone, and then I end up being late or not going. So I mean, those, you know, the thing that being sidetracked, it can be a hindrance, or at the same time, it can be part of the journey. So is my goal being there, or is that going there along the way is part of the experience? So I think that those are the two things that come to my mind. Yeah. Thank you so much. Yeah.
I think exploring that, you might find that expectation is a symptom of a hindrance. So it might be a symptom of restlessness, that you went into some mental ideas of what the future might hold. It could be a symptom of a sense desire, that you expect it because you want it. You're hoping and optimistic. So I think when we experience things, sometimes it's helpful to realize they could be compounded. It could be several things going on. I talked a little bit about anger. Anger, I think, is often several emotions that build up into one thing. So if we're in the here and now, we can watch that pattern as it builds and as it happens. And who knows, maybe I'm wrong, but I would be surprised if an expectation comes out of nowhere.
The other thing I think is a little bit unique is the way you frame it or you present it is you know, the same thing, and then you take away the self and it turn into something else. I think that's also a unique way of looking at something. You know, I mean, the same energy, but with you in it or without you in it, it can kind of turn things around. I think that's also something, you know, maybe put someone else in it, right? Instead of you, put someone else in it. So I think it's a good way of looking at things.
Thanks for your talk, Anna. So I was thinking about Umar's story and how you were talking about how your mother was feeling like she wasn't good enough, like she hadn't done enough in her life. And how common that is in especially US culture. And I was thinking about how in my mind that connects to the fifth hindrance of doubt, because I think about the type of doubt is sort of doubt in the practice, like that being here and now is always the one practice that we need to do, and sort of going along with that, you know, kind of doubting our own Buddha nature, and that if we practice, then we're sort of realizing and enacting our Buddha nature that we already are. And so, yeah, I was just kind of reflecting on how doubt can come up in these sort of sneaky ways sometimes.
This talk was brought to you by the Canando Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to canando.org. That's kanondo.org.